A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been watching Israeli startups advertise their weekly happy hour as the main reason to work there, and the beer is, quote, usually pretty mediocre. His actual question is, what are the most absurd and ludicrous fringe benefits startups have used as recruitment lures or retention hooks? Not the ping pong table, not the equity options, the truly bizarre outliers.
This is one of those topics where once you start digging, you realize the ping pong table is basically the least interesting thing in the room. It's practically dignified compared to what's out there.
The ping pong table is the beige wallpaper of startup dysfunction. It's what you put up when you want people to stop looking at the walls.
Meanwhile, companies were installing $12,000 nap pods. These things called energy pods. Google and Facebook had them. And the subtext is basically, we expect you to be so exhausted from working here that you'll need to sleep on site.
Which is not a perk. That's a symptom with a price tag.
And then there's the free dinner that Uber and Lyft became famous for, but it only kicked in after 7 p.m. So it's not free dinner, it's a nudge. A very expensive catered nudge that says, you're not leaving at 5.
The meal that dares you to have a life outside the office.
That's the thread Daniel's pulling on, whether he knows it or not. The happy hour with mediocre beer isn't just cheesy, it's a signal. It says, we want the optics of a perk without the cost of actual compensation.
The question underneath this question is, does anyone actually fall for this? Like, who is making a career decision based on a slice of pizza once a week?
That's what makes the stories from the boom years so fascinating as a cautionary tale. VC funding has tightened dramatically. We've seen the contraction since 2022, the layoffs continuing. And supposedly, the era of absurd perks is over. But the pattern is still instructive, because it reveals what happens when companies try to substitute cheap social events for real pay.
The nap pod, the 7 p.m. dinner, the keg of beer that costs the company maybe 40 bucks a week. These aren't just silly. They're a window into a specific kind of organizational self-deception.
Some of the stories are genuinely comical. I mean, we're going to get into examples that make the ping pong table look like a 401k match.
Of course there are.
Let's define what we're actually talking about here, because the ping pong table is just the tip of the iceberg.
What makes a fringe benefit absurd versus just generous? Because there is a line, and I think the line is whether the perk is actually for you or for the company's story about itself.
That's exactly the right lens. A generous perk solves a real problem for the employee: health insurance, a learning budget, flexible hours. An absurd perk solves a PR problem for the employer. It's theater.
The kombucha tap as corporate costume jewelry.
Daniel's experience with the Israeli happy hour is the perfect entry point because it's so nakedly transparent. A weekly happy hour costs the company maybe 150 shekels, that's 40 bucks, and they're positioning it as the main reason to take the job.
In Tel Aviv, where a pint at a bar runs you 35 shekels and rent eats half your paycheck. The math is almost insulting if you stop to do it.
That's the thing. Most candidates don't stop to do it, at least not consciously, but the gut registers it. The mediocre beer isn't just mediocre beer. It's the company saying, we want you to feel like we're giving you something, without actually giving you anything of value.
It's the thought that counts, except the thought is, how little can we spend?
And this isn't just an Israeli phenomenon, though the cost of living dynamics in Tel Aviv make it especially egregious. It's a global pattern. Startups everywhere have been substituting cheap social events for real compensation for at least 15 years.
Why do they keep doing it if it clearly doesn't work?
Part of it is mimicry. The early Google and Facebook campuses had all these famous amenities, and a generation of founders internalized that as what a successful startup looks like. But they missed the part where Google was also paying extremely competitive salaries.
They copied the snack bar and skipped the compensation structure, like building a cathedral and forgetting the religion.
The other piece is that perks are visible to investors in a way that salary bands aren't. A venture capitalist walking through the office sees the keg, the ping pong table, the neon sign that says something like, "Hustle hard, stay humble," and it confirms the narrative. The perks are fundraising props.
The absurd perk is a two-audience play. To recruits, it says we're fun. To investors, it says we're a real startup, and neither audience is actually being served.
That's before we even get to the perks that are actively manipulative, where the function isn't just signaling, it's control. If we want to understand the taxonomy of absurd perks, I think there are four buckets. The first is what I'd call the We're a Family substitutes. Pet insurance, on-site laundry, grocery delivery. Things that say you never need to leave us because we've recreated your actual life inside the office.
The company is a parent who's not sure they want you to move out.
Pet insurance is the crown jewel of this category because it sounds caring, but it's also a way of saying your dog is now a retention tool. You can't quit. Fluffy's deductible hasn't been met.
Like adopting a feral cat, and then realizing the cat adopted you. Except the cat is your employer, and it has your veterinary records.
The second bucket is darker, the We Own Your Time perks. This is the nap pod, the free dinner after 7 p.m. These aren't benefits, they're infrastructure for extracting more hours.
The nap pod is the one that really gets me. A $12,000 cocoon that says, we've normalized exhaustion to the point where horizontal unconsciousness in the workplace is a selling point.
Energy pods weren't some obscure gimmick. Google installed them. Facebook installed them. Huffington Post had them. The messaging was, look how much we care about wellness. The reality was, we've made the workday so long that sleep has to happen on company property.
It's the architectural equivalent of a hostage situation with a throw pillow.
The third bucket is the we don't know what else to offer category. The beer keg, the ping pong table, the board game night. These are what you reach for when you can't compete on salary and you've run out of ideas.
The foosball table is a white flag.
Then the fourth bucket is the we're trying too hard in office massage, meditation rooms, kombucha on tap. These are the perks that are trying to signal sophistication, but mostly signal that someone on the leadership team just read a blog post about Google's campus.
The kombucha tap is the glockenspiel of corporate approachability.
Here's what connects all four buckets. The psychological mechanism. A bad perk is actually worse than no perk at all because it creates a contrast effect. If you offer nothing, the candidate evaluates the salary and the work. If you offer cheap beer and a granola bar, the candidate subconsciously does the math and realizes you think they can be bought for $5 a week.
The insult isn't the beer. The insult is the assumption about what you'll accept.
There was a story that made the rounds a few years ago. A startup listed free snacks as a headline benefit in their job posting. Candidates showed up, and it was a single bowl of granola bars, not even a variety of granola bars. And they were never restocked.
The granola bar bowl that launched 1,000 Glassdoor reviews.
In Tel Aviv, there was a startup that advertised weekly team building as a core perk. What it actually meant was the founder, who fancied himself a foosball champion, would make everyone play foosball with him for an hour every Thursday. He'd get competitive about it.
It's not team building. It's a captive audience for someone's ego.
Which brings us back to Daniel's happy hour observation. The mediocre beer is profound because the quality of the perk is the signal. If you're going to make beer your main recruitment pitch, at least make it good beer. The fact that it's cheap says everything. The company isn't even trying to fool you well.
The cheap beer is the honest part. It's the company accidentally telling the truth about how much they value you.
Founders keep doing this because they confuse activity with investment. A keg costs $40 a week. A nap pod is a one-time purchase of $12,000 that photographs well for the careers page. These are cheaper than raising everyone's salary by $5,000 a year, which is what people actually want.
The absurd perk is fundamentally an arbitrage play. Swap a visible, cheap thing for an invisible, expensive thing, and hope nobody notices the swap.
The candidates who do notice, the ones who do the math, are usually the ones you most want to hire. Which means these perks don't just fail to attract talent, they actively filter it out. Here's where it gets worse, and this is the part most coverage misses. These perks don't just fail to attract the right people, they actively repel them. A high performer walks into an interview, sees the keg and the foosball table, and does the math in about 4 seconds. They know what competitive compensation looks like, and this isn't it.
The best candidates treat the kombucha tap as a reverse reference check. The company is telling you exactly who they are, just not on purpose.
This is the knock-on effect Daniel's really getting at with his cynicism. It's not that the beer is mediocre, it's that the mediocrity is the message. A serious engineer or product person looks at a weekly happy hour positioned as a main benefit and thinks, if this is what you're proud of, what aren't you telling me about the salary?
It's the peacock's tail in reverse. Instead of signaling fitness, it signals desperation.
There was a study out of Harvard Business Review a few years back that found something counterintuitive. When companies emphasize fun perks in job postings, application rates from top-tier candidates actually dropped. The perks were functioning as a negative signal about compensation.
The startup that advertises its nap pod is accidentally running a filter that screens out everyone who knows what a nap pod actually means.
Then there's the investor angle, which is its own kind of theater. During the boom years, a lot of these perks weren't for employees at all. They were for the venture capitalist doing the office tour before writing the check. The keg, the open floor plan, the neon sign, it was stagecraft.
Build me a chair nobody notices they're sitting in, except the chair is a $12,000 sleep cocoon, and the person sitting in it is a partner from Sequoia.
The perks were fundraising props, and VCs were complicit in this. They expected to see the trappings. A startup without a ping-pong table looked insufficiently startup-y. It was a mutual hallucination.
The absurd perk economy was basically a signaling game where both sides knew it was a signaling game, and neither wanted to admit it, because admitting it would mean having to talk about actual unit economics.
Then 2022 happened. VC funding contracted dramatically. The first things to go were the absurd perks, massage therapists, kombucha deliveries, the snack budget that was somehow $12,000 a month. Gone within weeks.
Funny how the things that were supposedly essential to culture turned out to be entirely optional when the money got tight.
Here's the pattern that's lingered, and this is relevant to what Daniel's seeing in Israel right now. Companies that still can't offer competitive salaries are still reaching for cheap social perks as a Hail Mary. The playbook didn't die, it just got more transparent.
The post-correction world hasn't killed the absurd perk. It's just stripped away the pretense. Now it's not a nap pod and a keg. It's a weekly pizza and the promise of a fun team. Same logic, lower budget.
In the Israeli market specifically, this lands differently. Tel Aviv is one of the most expensive cities in the world, top 20 globally. A pint costs 35 shekels. Rent is astronomical. So when a startup offers a weekly happy hour with mediocre beer as a headline benefit, it's not just cheesy, it's insulting.
Daniel's joke about making enough money to go to a bar is actually the entire argument in one sentence. The perk that costs the company pennies and saves the employee nothing is worse than useless. It's a reminder of the gap between what you're being offered and what you actually need.
If you're paying Tel Aviv rent, a free beer on Thursday doesn't move the needle. It moves the needle in the wrong direction because it tells you the company thinks it does.
The beer isn't a benefit. It's a taunt.
There's a story I came across about a startup in Tel Aviv, this was maybe 4 years ago, that listed stocked kitchen as a perk. Candidates showed up and it was a vending machine with the prices removed. Same machine, same products, they'd just peeled off the stickers.
Covering the covers.
The vending machine wasn't even free, you still had to pay. They just didn't want you to see the prices until you'd already swiped your card.
That's not a stocked kitchen. That's a hostage situation with a cliff bar.
Then there's the unlimited vacation trap, which deserves its own category of absurdity. Multiple studies have shown that employees at companies with unlimited PTO actually take fewer days off than those with traditional accrual systems. The lack of a defined bank creates ambiguity, and ambiguity defaults to zero.
Unlimited vacation, where unlimited means zero, and vacation means guilt.
One survey from Namely, the HR platform, found that employees with unlimited PTO took an average of 13 days off per year, compared to 15 under traditional systems. The perk literally reduced the benefit it was supposed to expand.
It's the thought that counts. Except the thought is, we've structured this so you'll never use it, and we'll never have to pay out accrued days when you leave.
The pet-friendly office is the other one that sounds great until you actually think about it. There was a company, I think it was a San Francisco startup, that went all in on dogs in the office with zero policies. No rules about noise, no allergy accommodations, no cleanup protocol. Within 3 months, they had a Slack channel called something like Dog Incidents that was just a running log of chaos.
the tragedy of the Commons. But the Commons is an open plan office, and the tragedy has a bark collar.
Here's the thing about all of these. The one perk that actually works, that consistently correlates with retention and satisfaction, is the boring stuff. Remote work options. A real professional development budget. The research on this is unambiguous.
The entire absurd perk industry is basically a massive exercise in avoiding the obvious. People want money, autonomy, and growth. Everything else is noise.
The noise is loudest when the signal is weakest. If we're going to pull something useful out of this carnival, the first thing is brutally simple. When you get a job offer, do the math. Convert every perk into cash. The free beer is worth $5 a week. The nap pod is worth zero, because you're never going to use it, and if you do, something has gone wrong in your life.
The nap pod has negative value. Using it means you've lost.
Once you do that conversion, you can compare offers honestly. A 5,000 shekel salary difference dwarfs every kombucha tap and pizza Friday combined.
The spreadsheet is the antidote to the theater.
The second filter is even simpler. Ask who this perk is actually for. If it's flexible hours, alluring budget, remote work, that's for you. If it's a ping pong tournament or a keg, that's for the company's careers page.
The beneficiary test. If the perk would disappear the moment no one was watching, it was never for you.
For founders listening, if you can't offer competitive salaries, don't try to fake it with cheap beer. Candidates respect honesty. Saying, we're early stage, here's what we could do, here's what we can't, lands better than a happy hour with warm gold star.
The transparency is the perk. It says you respect them enough to skip the performance.
Which brings us to the thing underneath all of this. The most absurd perk of all is the belief that perks can replace a good salary, respectful culture, and meaningful work. That's the actual delusion. Everything else is just the symptom.
Here's the question I keep coming back to. We're in a different moment now. 2026. Funding's still tight. Layoffs still happening. If the next boom cycle hits, do the nap pods come back? Or did we actually learn something?
I want to believe we learned something, but the pattern is pretty stubborn. Every generation of founders thinks they're building a new kind of company, and every generation of founders ends up buying the same $12,000 sleep cocoon.
The cocoon is patient. The cocoon waits.
What might actually change things is the remote work shift. It's harder to lure someone with a kombucha tap when they're working from their kitchen. The absurd perk loses its power when the perk can't be photographed.
The real threat to the nap pod industry isn't wisdom, it's Zoom.
Which means the next wave of absurd perks will probably be digital. Mandatory virtual happy hours. Wellness app subscriptions nobody asked for. The metaverse equivalent of the foosball table.
The spirit is willing, but the budget is weak.
If there's one thing I hope sticks from this whole conversation, it's Daniel's original observation turned into a rule. The best perk a company can offer is a paycheck that lets you buy your own beer at a bar you choose, with people you actually want to see.
That's the whole thing. Everything else is set dressing.
If you've encountered a truly absurd startup perk, not the ping pong table, something weird, send it in. We might do a follow-up episode. The vending machine with the prices peeled off set a high bar, but I believe in this industry's capacity for worse.
I have faith in the absurd.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
Cuttlefish can produce a near-perfect acoustic camouflage by adjusting the texture of their skin to match the sound-reflective properties of their surroundings. A phenomenon researchers at Kathmandu University have studied using sonar imaging of cuttlefish in tanks lined with different materials. Finding that the animals alter not just their visual appearance, but their acoustic signature within seconds.
They're hiding from sonar now.
This has been my weird prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We're back next week.
I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. Thanks for listening.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host digging, the
the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.